Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to Jenny Green for getting us through the afternoon. It's Tuesday the 18th of May and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we've live action underway at Old Trafford, plus a big game to preview as all the Liverpool fans sit down to watch Chelsea take on Leicester City again in the race for Champions League spots.
It's a new game, it's a new challenge, we'll be motivated for that. Everything's still in our hands, so we've got two games now to arrive into the top four. We've got a great opportunity to qualify, and the two games to go, we aim to take it.
Of course, the situation is very clear, it's still in our hands, this is absolutely positive and what we worked hard for, we should not forget, and we approach the game more or less like any other game. When the more tension is on, the more normal approach we use.
Plus, who better to help us preview that game than Chelsea great Pat Nevin, who'll join us live from Stamford Bridge.
You'll want it fairly from Donaghy. By a player who has that quality in abundance.
Gary Murphy will be along to preview the US PGA Championships at Kiwa Island, and Shane Foley is going to join us on the road home from Sligo as he looks ahead to his ride on Lucky Vega in the 2000 Guineas.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, there is plenty of Premier League action to tune in to this evening, and the fans will be a very welcome sight across the grounds. But let's cross over first to Darren Stanage as Manchester United host Fulham at Old Trafford. Darren.
Yeah, Manchester United have welcomed 10,000 fans back to Old Trafford. It's the first time in around about 16 months, of course, United and City could not have fans back at all so far this season. So it's the first time United are about to see their team in action. We've played 6 minutes so far. The fans have been in great voice, a mix of celebrating their players as well as being vocal about their feelings towards their desire for the removal of their owners. But no reports of any unsavoury scenes. I'm very pleased to say United can clinch second with a victory today. Fulham, of course, already relegated. We played 5 minutes. It's Manchester United 0, Fulham 0.
Thanks, Darren. And just in terms of the early stages and the teams, is there anybody standing out?
Well, I think the United fans have been trying to really egg on their attacking players. So in the likes of Pogba, Fernandes and Cavani, of course, who's never played at Old Trafford in front of fans, certainly. There's certainly a real roar of appreciation when they get the ball and the fans try and move them forward. But Fulham, given as good as they're getting so far, we've not had any shots by either of the two sides. So it's been possession of football, really. But Fulham, they'll want to finish in a strong way, of course. They've not managed to win a game in their last eight, so we'll see whether they can inflict a third successive defeat here at Old Trafford. Of course, United lost the last two home games, but with the fans back, surely the Manchester United players will be able to step it up a gear and try and clinch that second place finish tonight.
And for a team like Fulham, it is important to finish the season strongly, even though they are relegated.
Well, yeah, you've said that. Obviously, you've known Fulham have been down now, so it's all about planning for next season. Who's going to be here? Who is going to depart? And, you know, will the manager remain? Scott Parker, of course, very highly rated. There's no talk of him not being at the club next season from the club's point of view. Certainly, their choice would be that he stays on. He's made a few changes tonight, four changes tonight, so he's certainly having a look at his squad ahead of another season in the Championship next year.
And Darren, on another note, the man in the middle, Lee Mason, it's his final game as a Premier League referee, 288 matches. Yeah, big night for him as well.
I was going to say that's an incredible achievement, really, as well. So many games. I heard that it was going to be his last game. You wonder how many games of such massive importance he has refereed before. You know, he's letting the game flow here. I'm just watching him now, giving an advantage as Paul Pogba moves into the penalty area. Fred's going to nip one across the face of goal, but the offside flag is up. But yeah, you're right. Great achievement for him to have so many Premier League games under his belt. And what a beautiful theatre, of course, to finish his referee career.
We are very excited about the run in, Darren, and who are going to clinch those Champions League spots. Manchester United already there, albeit or depending on tonight's results, but they have secured the Champions League football and just their season in general. And for Ollie, when you think about where he started off and all the criticism he got, and to be here in this situation, he's really turned things around.
Yeah, he has. I think Manchester United fans are very pleased with the progress that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has made. You know, you can see improvements in the way his team's liking to play. I don't think he's got the players fully that he wants yet. People talk about maybe not having those two holding players. At the moment, he's kind of stuck with Fred and McTominay to protect that back four. And I think that's been a bit of an issue, that perhaps he wants to play with a little bit more of an attacking threat to start to move United up to the next step. But I think a second place finish, if they can win the Europa League next week, of course, you would probably argue it's been certainly a successful end to the season. And it's then how much backing will he get in the summer to kind of bring United up to that next level. There's decisions to be made from the likes of Paul Pogba. He's got 1 year left on his contract. We know Cavani's going to stay for a year. Is there going to be any room for Harry Kane? Of course, there's been lots of talk since he announced he wanted to leave Tottenham. You would only really see in England, United, City and Chelsea with the power to do that. But is that going to be something that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will want? We'll have to wait and see what happens. But I think, like you said, in the main, he's certainly been very popular here. He's had to deal with lots of things, and obviously even over the last couple of weeks he's protested by the fans who were really unhappy with the European Super League. And he's very much got the fans on side, and I think that's a real positive for him and for United.
Just on Harry Kane, we did hear Roy Keane a few weeks ago suggest that he could possibly go to Manchester United. I know that the money would be a massive issue, but is he someone that you think could fit into that Manchester United team?
I think everyone thinks that, you know, you can't have too many top quality players. And in terms of centre forwards, obviously Cavani's not been fit for the whole season. He's 34 years old, so he's, you know, he can still do a job up there. He's not going to be able to play week in, week out though, and you kind of feel that Manchester United haven't got that centre forward who's going to be pushing to challenge United for the trophies if they get up to that situation. And Harry Kane, well, I think he's going to be embraced by anywhere he goes. The question is, will Manchester United do a deal with Tottenham? Traditionally, that's been very, very difficult, and you wouldn't really imagine Tottenham being that happy to see one of their prize assets, their main asset, move to one of their rivals. That's going to be the only thing that perhaps could stand in the way. But you know, who knows in football? I think what you would say, like you said, money talks, doesn't it?
Exactly, Darren. We will catch up with you a little bit later on. And now we are going to continue our football conversation, because there is an absolutely huge game this evening, with fourth place Chelsea welcoming third place Leicester City to Stamford Bridge, as those spots for the Champions League football are within reach of both Chelsea, Leicester and Liverpool. So it is all to play for, lots to get through, and I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Pat Nevin to talk through all of the action and also to speak about his new book, The Accidental Footballer. And Pat is at Stamford Bridge. Pat, is it tense there?
It is extraordinarily tense. There's going to be 8,000 people on the ground tonight, which is fabulous news. So it'll be a bit of a buzz about the place. But every single person I've talked to involved with Chelsea and they're not making this up. The FA Cup final was only an appetizer for this game. That's how important this game is. It's more important than the FA Cup final, certainly for the upper echelons of Chelsea Football Club. But for many people with fans, if Chelsea lose this game, trust me, they ain't going to go get top four and go in the Champions League this season. They'll have to go and win the Champions League against Man City. And that's a big call for them. So tense? Absolutely. Unbelievably tense.
It's a bit like, it's a bit of deja vu about it, Pat. I mean, last season they were overhauled, laid on by Man City and dropped to fifth place. Is the same thing about to happen to Chelsea again? Marie is hoping it will. She's a big Liverpool fan. She needs something to go wrong for Chelsea.
It was Leicester that they struggled last year, wasn't it? Chelsea managed to get in. So they sneaked it last year. And I think Leicester don't want that to happen again. I think Leicester did bottle it last year. I would totally agree with that to some degree. But then they've got a smaller squad. And that's their problem tonight, because Leicester put everything into that game at Wembley on Saturday. Chelsea put a lot in. Chelsea could make 9 changes and it won't make them any weaker. Leicester can't do that. So Brendan Rodgers has gone to the well quite a few times with that group, and they've continued to go and drink from it and do well. But it's a hard one. There's Stamford Bridge tonight. There's no Johnny Evans tonight. There's a huge amount asked of Leicester tonight. And, whether it's a great game or not, I don't care. You know what it's like. There can be races that are stinker races, but you know, come to the last furlong, if two of our horses are together, you
it's
don't
about
care.
The result. It's all about the result.
Exactly. So that's exactly what it feels like tonight. So tense, yes. Excited, yes. Everything, yes. Chelsea have had four cup finals in a row. They've got one, they've lost the first one. Actually, can make that five. They won, lost the first one FA Cup. The women lost the Champions League final, which I was watching as well. This one's a cup final. Next week against Aston Villa is a cup final to get the Champions League, and then they've got the Champions League, and you want to be in the big ones, don't you? But this is so stressful.
And Pat, when you just consider what happened with Leicester last year and bottling it at the end, and then you think about Chelsea and the situation that they're in with Thomas Tuchel having turned things around but still could finish the season with nothing, who do you think is under more pressure going into this game tonight, Brendan Rodgers or Thomas Tuchel?
Brendan Rodgers under less pressure than me right now. He's just won the FA Cup. He's cruising. Because you think about Leicester, that's an amazing thing for them. I mean, they're still so far above the curve, and it's brilliant for Brendan. I'm so happy for him because, you know, what a great job he'd done, you know, certainly up at Celtic, and I thought he'd done a decent job at Liverpool. But he's came down and he had to make his name again. And if you win the FA Cup with Leicester, you've done it. Job done. So, in actual fact, if they don't get into the Champions League, they'll deal with it. Financially, they can cope with it. It's different for Chelsea. They need that. Well, not need the money, because they've got Roman Abramovich there, but they could really do with that money if they're going to be in the conversation for the Harry Kanes of this world when they come up, you know, at the end of the season. So that's a big, big thing for them. And for Tuchel himself, he's under much more pressure than Brendan Rodgers is in, because he was brought in, and he's admitted that this himself, he was brought in to get Champions League football. The club thought that Frank Lampard wasn't going to manage it. They may or may not have been right. But Tuchel, up until 2 weeks ago, looked as if he had. It's beginning to look a bit rocky now. So, yeah, he's under a bit of pressure. And I'm tempted to say, well, they wouldn't sack him after the great run. You never say that at Chelsea. You never, no chance. The phrases you never say at Chelsea Football Club is they won't sack the manager, right? So,
Pat, when you look back at it now, was putting Frank Lampard in a little bit of a premature call?
Possibly so, but they will see that. I mean, I think differently from the way Chelsea do. You know, the way it was is Chelsea fans, we thought it was bringing in Frank and he'd steadied the ship and he was cruising along and it was gliding along. You're bringing young players in. It was a lovely, lovely little journey we were on. The club wanted a high-power speedboat. That's the difference. And they wanted it to go and break all records by the end of the season. So the club and the fans want something different. So Frank was a good decision if you were going to give him time. Club didn't want time. So it depends what you want. I'd have been happy to wait for Frank to develop it over 2 or 3 years, whereas the club said, no, they want it now. And to be fair, it's hard to argue against the club because they get rid of the managers every year or two. But then it's like, 21 buses. There's another one along in a minute. He'll be brilliant as well.
It's funny, Pat, when you listen to what you're saying and you look at the two clubs that are playing tonight and you listen to Gary Lineker at the end of Match of the Day the other night, where he just repeated saying Leicester are the FA Cup winners. What that meant to Leicester fans, they're two completely different animals, yeah. Leicester and Chelsea.
Yeah. No, absolutely so. Although the fans might not be like that. I'll say that the clubs might be like that, but the fans are different. And as we all know, there's been a disconnect between the clubs and the fans recently, quite a big one. But for the fans, it's still a big old deal to win the FA Cup, especially the fans that have been around long enough to have maybe known the likes of me. You know, those fans absolutely love the concept of the FA Cup. But the worldwide fans, the ones that, you know, the club are maybe looking more towards, they want to win the Champions League. They want to be in the Champions League every year. That's the deal for them. So you're actually working in two different markets there. To me, the FA Cup's a fabulous thing. I never got to win it. I managed to lose after extra time in a final. And it's not that I'm bitter, but I'm still arguing that Liverpool cheated that day by beating my team Everton.
VAR, and VAR.
I can prove it. No, the cheating was they brought on Ian Rush as a sub. That's cheating as far as I'm concerned. You know, it shouldn't be allowed to bring on Ian Rush as a sub. It's not good to be a sub. So anyway, big old deal for all of us. But at the end of the season, if FA Cup was Leicester's and Chelsea got top four, I think both clubs would be quite happy. But don't tell that to Brendan Rodgers, 200 yards behind me right now, because he won't accept that.
So you are at the game, and just in terms of how you think it's going to play out, are we going to get a different game than we got at the weekend?
You always do. It's never the same. And particularly as Chelsea at home, Chelsea, and it's win or bust, kind of, for both of them as well. You've got this odd situation where the way the maths go, Liverpool have it in their own hands, Chelsea have it in their own hands, and Leicester have it in their own hands as we speak. I mean, that's the way the maths work, right? So how mad is that? If one of those teams win the last two games, then they go in. It's just, it's getting your head around, it's bizarre. But it all depends on tonight's game. This is the one. This is the ones that we're excited about looking for. So it won't be the same game. It'll be all up and at 'em. If you wanted to go all technical about it, I could tell you the fact that Reece James won't be as defensive, and Aspilicueta will. He'll have to make a slight change from 3-4-3 to 3-5-2, but who cares about all that stuff? Get into them, as we say in Scotland.
Do you think, just before we get there, actually, Cavani has scored, so United are one up against Fulham already, but do you think Schmeichel in goal is going to be key for Leicester? I mean, he was incredible at the weekend. Can he repeat that performance?
Yeah, because he does it all the time. He makes very, very few mistakes. And up until recently, Chelsea weren't making a lot of chances, but they were converting a good percentage of them. And then they had to re-change. They played against Real Madrid home and away and played brilliantly and made a lot of chances. But it's back to normal again, you know. And if they make one or two chances and Schmeichel's on that type of form again, they could be in trouble, because they need, both teams want all 3 points, but Chelsea need all 3 points that little bit more than Leicester City do. Yes, Michael, I wouldn't be surprised if he's the most important player on the pitch tonight, because he will have to be good. I have every belief that Chelsea will ask a lot of questions, get a lot of chances. So yeah, Peter Schmeichel, especially if you, Kasper Schmeichel, I should say, I'm showing my age there. But they've not got Johnny Evans playing. I think he'll be injured again tonight. So that shows there'll probably be one or two weak links at the back. So it will be partially up to the keeper to be in great form.
I know they're professional players and they're trained to do this all the time, but is it hard to get up? Will it be hard for them to get up, for Leicester to get up for this game after the high of winning the FA Cup, just from an emotional point of view, to raise it up again tonight?
Hope so. Says the completely biased Nevin here. I won't hide the fact that I want Chelsea to win. But yeah, look, it will be slightly more for them. But there's another way of looking at it. And the other way of looking at it is simple. You know, they've won. The pressure's off them. They can relax. They've got a cup and they've got the medals in the back pocket. They've also won the last game between the two. So that's a psychological positive that they've got. Physically, they might be a bit more tired and they can't make as many changes. But look, it's a bit, you don't throw sympathy out there. I mean, there's enough sportsmen around the world that go and be a rugby player, be a horse rider, whatever. You get up and you do it. You professionally get back and you go on and you're as good as you possibly can be. And it's what happens on the day that matters. And it may well be that, you know, Leicester players turn up today and they feel brilliant. So it might be a hindrance, it might be a help. But I suspect if Chelsea play at their very best and Leicester play at their very best, I think Chelsea will win it. But that's some big ifs that we've got now.
It really is. Well, we will find out at 8:15 because that's when the game kicks off. Stay with us, Pat. We are going to cross over to Darren Stanage at Old Trafford for an update.
It's Manchester United 1, Fulham 0, and what a fantastic goal. Edinson Cavani has just treated the Manchester United fans to. From defence to attack in one quick move, De Gea played the ball out to Bruno Fernandes. Lovely little flick to set Cavani away, and he spotted the goalkeeper off his line, and he managed to chip the ball over the top of the goalkeeper and into the back of the net. And then he got on his knees, he drew his fake bow and arrow, of course, much to the absolute joy of the Manchester United fans. So we've had a wonderful goal here at Old Trafford. Nothing else in terms of opportunities. Manchester United have been totally dominant in terms of the ball, but a fantastic goal to treat the Old Trafford fans too from Edinson Cavani with his 10th of the season so far. We've played 21 minutes at Old Trafford. It's Manchester United 1, Fulham 0.
Thank you very much, Darren. Now, I'm delighted to say that we are in the company of Pat Nevin, for anyone who is just joining us, and he has a brilliant book out, The Accidental Footballer. Pat, it was so enjoyable, and I was chatting to Ruby a little bit off air earlier about it, and one thing that really stuck out from reading is it was your childhood. You seem to have the most idyllic, perfect, fun, enjoyable childhood, full of innocence, and obviously it shaped the person that you became.
Yeah, full of innocence and full of love from the family. Not that we ever said that word to each other, obviously, because you don't in the East End of Glasgow. But, you know, parents that had that kind of... they're brought up in a Catholic background, you know, very Catholic family, but very Christian ethic of, you know, be kind to other people, do... You have to give to the community and to other people as well. But just surrounded by, you know, people that were looking out for you and wanted the best for you. And there's so many... I mean, I could have written the whole book, you know, about my childhood. I mean...
And I would have read it.
That's two of us.
It's lovely. It's lovely. I mean, you know, the amount of times I've done a few interviews about the book so far, everyone asks different questions. And that's the lovely thing about it. See, if people ask just the same question about the same part of the book, you'd begin to think, oh, is there only one good story in there? But happily, everyone, although people do always ask about my dog, Shandy, who is a bit of the star of the show, along with the family early on, because he did some strange things. But I couldn't get it all in. I mean, one of the stories I didn't get in, I used to spend all my summers in this strange little village in Ireland, which none of you know, called Prosperous and Naas. None of you have ever been there, eh? Ruben.
I used to play. I've never been there. What would you be doing in Prosperous?
You should have seen him there. He was getting up out of the seat about to go.
Left out of it.
I know, it's because my family all come from Prosperous, and that's where the family house is. And every summer, that's where we went from the age of, well, 2 onwards till 10 or 11 every
from
single year.
From the east
year
side of Glasgow to Prosperous. My God, I mean, that is like just like, talk about chalk and cheese.
Exactly. And it was a bit of a holiday for us. It was fantastic because when I had the choice between playing for Ireland and playing for Scotland, and my dad was kind of gutted that I'd chosen. And one of the stories in the book later on is about the fact that I played for Scotland one day and it was against Ireland, and it was... we were playing the Republic at Hampden Park and we had to win Scotland and we got beat. And Mark Lawrence, many of you may remember of a certain age, Mark Lawrence scored that night after taking a free kick 50 yards away from where it should have been. Not that I'm bitter, but I walked off
some memory for things that went wrong, mind you.
That's sports people for you. We remember the downers, don't we?
Yeah.
And but I walked out after the game, and as I walked out, I was gutted, and there's my dad standing there smiling. I'm going, what are you smiling at? You weren't supporting them, were you? And he goes, well, your son's playing for Scotland and you're supporting Ireland. And he did have a good line. He said, well, if you're going to get beat with anyone's son, that's who to get beat by. And that was a good way out of it for him. And that was the year that I was in the group that went over and we played against Bulgaria. And we had to beat Bulgaria to get Ireland through. And we did. And it was a magical night, and nobody Irish was there except myself and Paul McStay and Brian McClare, who were all desperate to win it for the old country. So, I mean, there are lots and lots of stories that go miles in the book, but there are so many things I couldn't get in. But the joy of it was I'd never really looked back in my life, because sportsmen don't. We always look forward. You're trained to look forward. You look at your last race and you're a loser. You need to look forward. And I kind of forgot to do it. And then about a couple of years ago, I thought, I'm just going to have a look at this. And I started writing. And honestly, my hands were like a whirl. I'm a quick typist anyway. But I'd finished the book so, so quickly. And I loved writing it. People get half as much fun out of reading it as I got writing it. Honestly, it'll be all right. It'll be fine.
I love some of the stories in it, especially in your childhood. And I know it's back early in the book, mm-hmm. but playing football every evening. And hundreds of kids playing in street leagues. Yeah. I know your dad was heavily involved in it.
Yeah.
But when you think of the amount of kids that were playing soccer in Glasgow at that time, and I'm sure it was the same all over England, was it any wonder that they had so many kids playing compared to what's happening now?
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons Scotland's had a struggle, you know, it's a generation or two since, the last time Scotland qualified for a Euros or a World Cup, I was playing. That's how long it was. But now they've finally got back into one this year. And obviously, we've got England in our group. But there has been a dearth of quality coming through. They've not been terrible players, but we used to produce, you know, Jimmy Johnsons, Kenny Dalglishes, you know, Graham Souness's and Alan Hansons. And they used to be world-class players, you know, all the time. And just the last few years, we're beginning to see a little view of that coming back. And, you know, the upside of it is, you know, we've got two of the best left backs in the world, which is a bit annoying, we'd rather have one left back and one right back, which was the best that we would help. But, you know, Kieran Tierney, I would say, is the best on the planet at the moment in that position. And Robertson's next best, probably. We've got, you know, a lot of players coming through that are half decent. So we've got exciting times here. But have we produced them to the same level? No. And is it because of what you say, all those hundreds of kids playing every single night? Mm. Yeah, that's a definite big part of it. And again, one of the stories involves, you know, I remember playing those games. And again, I think us Celts have this in common. Like, I remember playing lots of games where there'd be a gang fight across the pitch with knives and swords and people with golf clubs running each other. And we'd all stop, they'd run across it, and then we'd just start again. And we thought that was normal. And you think... And if you did that now, it'd be on the 6 o'clock news, you know. But you, and it just, what I was loving about writing about it, it does sound like such a wonderfully wild, weird, different time. But I didn't want to kind of, you know, do it in any other way. That just remember the joy of it, and even the things that were not negative but hard. I mean, you say I had a lovely childhood. That was the worst housing district in Western Europe at the time, but I loved it. So it's how you take it and how you deal with it is the fun of it.
And that's something that really stands out as well. The amount of enjoyment that you got out of it, Pat, the amount of fun that it was for you, and your ideals as well when it came to football and sport, and that fun was at the centre of it. And a bit like Ruby says, you know, like, that's not the case so much anymore when it comes to sport.
I don't know if it even was then, to be honest. I think I was quite unusual even to that level. I mean, you know, some people absolutely loved it. You look back, close your eyes, and you remember the people that were out there and they were smiling all the time, you know, and they were happy, they were creative, all that sort of stuff. But it's kind of, there is pressure on these people. I was fortunate. I had a backstop. I mean, I was doing a degree, you know, I could go back and finish that and do another job. Most of the other guys around me, they didn't have that. They, quite simply, if they failed at football, they failed. So I understand why they suffered and had that pressure and put pressure on themselves. I just found a method and a way to make sure that I would not feel that. And so I never felt pressure. I never felt nervous. And I just done it for the love of it and the joy of it. And it kind of worked. And maybe if there's a moral or if there's a story behind the book, it's to say to people, see, if you do something you love and do it for the love, and you don't do it for the money or the fame or anything like that, but you do it for the love of it and keep the joy in it, especially if it's a creative thing, you'll be better at it. Promise you. Trust me, you will be better at it. And that's what I found. And the other thing, I suppose, throughout the book is, and again, it's not said out loud, but it's underlying the whole thing, is it's okay to be an outsider as well. Be yourself. Be comfortable in yourself. Because if you spend your whole life trying to be like everybody else that you're working with, they won't respect you for it. But be yourself and you should be respected. I managed to get by in football for a whole career. And even though they called me weirdo as a nickname, I still managed to get through.
Yeah, Pat, just on that, it's so important because, you know, in dressing rooms, it's quite easy to conform and to be individual and be yourself is quite difficult. Do you ever struggle with it? Or, you know, if there's younger listeners listening in that would, you know, be going into a dressing room where it's all high performance and, it has changed.
I hope it's changed. I don't know if it's changed. It probably has changed a little bit. But certainly there is that pressure there, but it's not a dressing room. It's anywhere, and I have to say it's mostly where men work, you know. But it is really. I mean, there is that kind of testosterone-filled stuff that you get. And that's why I kind of hope some young people do read this book, or parents who read it talk to their kids and say, hey, it's okay to be yourself. It's fine to be comfortable. But it's not easy. You're spot on. One of the kids, we had one kid coming through, and it was a wee bit different for the rest. So I'd take him out every afternoon and, you know, work with his skills, etc. And then me and my girlfriend would take him out and we'd take him to the theatre or, you know, tell him what, you know, albums or books to read or whatever, right? And just so that he had something else, because he was different for the rest of them. Problem was, after about 6 weeks, or probably a bit more than that, 2 months working with this kid, I was struggling to beat him. I'm thinking, am I losing it? Right, how was I to know Graham Lasso was going to turn into the best left-back in the country? I just picked this random kid to work with. And I'm thinking, I'm losing it. And I've actually picked at random England's next left back. But Graham was different as well. And Graham found it harder than me. But then I came from the rough east end of Glasgow. He came from very nice Jersey, you know, very nice middle class Jersey. So it was a wee bit harder for him. But over the years, he learned how to cope better. But, you know, when the bad things happened to him, he used to phone me up and tell me what was happening. And I always used to say the same thing. You're standing in this big mound of moral high ground. Why are you jumping off it, mate? Stay there. The things that they say about you, just laugh at them. And over the years, he learned to do that. Although he did once say to me, you don't seem to worry about the stick you get getting called whatever as you're running down the wing and people write things about you. And I said, no, I didn't. And he said, yeah, but you only had it for a few years. I get it all the time. And the publicity was bigger during Graham's period. And I'll grant him that. I will grant him that. But be yourself and you'll be okay.
Yeah, you really was in the spotlight, all right. And just from your own point of view, do you think that having that attitude, just the fact that you were able to be about yourself rather than what you were doing, did that help you then to almost protect you really from things when they didn't go your way? So if you didn't win a game, if there was disappointments, relegation, things like that?
Yeah, I think you are disappointed because there's nothing wrong with doing something for the love of it. But you can still be a winner. And you can still be dedicated. And that's the whole dichotomy of it. You can still have all those feelings. You can still be the biggest winner on the team. But you also, at some point in time, have to get it in perspective. And if I looked around where I came from and what other people were suffering from and, you know, the bad things that happened and the difficult life my mum and dad had with finances and things like that, there's no way I could sit and go in a big huff about it. Or I could go, but it'd be so indulgent of me to do so. So I just didn't see life that way. So it's all about perspective, really. Yeah, yes, be disappointed. Yes, make sure that you try and correct that and be the best you possibly can. And that was a thing that I think within the sport people couldn't understand. And I remember Jock Steen, I was working under him for a short time, and he worked so hard to get his head around it and eventually did. But he really tested me to find out if I had that harshness and strength of personality to be a winner, while I was always also this kind of slightly esoteric kid who wanted to go and see the ballet as well as the football, you know? So you can be more than one thing at one time, and that's the kind of thing that I always kind of wanted to be. But yes, you can be disappointed, but perspective, guys, come on.
But Pat, you also had a mindset of fairness. I mean, you're from the east side of Glasgow. You're a Celtic fan, but you didn't dislike Rangers. They were who they were. Must have taken... That wasn't following the trend.
No, it wasn't following the trend, and that was a family thing. My parents, they were fanatical Celtic supporters, and we would go to all the games. It wasn't about hatred, it was about love. The love of your club, the love of the history, all that sort of stuff. Didn't have to be about hatred. A lot of the songs we sang were good enough songs about the team, you know. That's the ones we sang. And we kind of had that feeling. So I didn't say I disliked or hated Rangers. I was massively disappointed in them because they had what I could only call as religious apartheid at the time. They didn't sing Protestants. Now, people will go and rewrite history and say, oh, in 1943, there was one guy that. No, they didn't sign Protestants. It's Catholic, sorry. They only signed Protestants. That's what I meant to say. And that's religious apartheid. And that infuriated me. And that was gross. And, you know, the day that they signed Maurice Johnson, and I knew Maurice since we were 11-year-olds in the same team together. And the day they signed him, although a less Catholic, you'll never meet than Maurice Johnston. I don't think he darkened the door of the church very often. I think my dog was a better Catholic. by the way, that's not abusive of Maurice. My dog was a right good Catholic. Never missed Mass every day. But the thing is, when they did that, and it kind of broke down some of the barriers, look, it's still there, and I can't be bothered with all that stuff. And I'm very outspoken about it. But at the time, I didn't hate them for it. I just thought, you're just backward. You need to grow up. You need to bring yourself into this century. And dragging and screaming a wee bit, you know, I think it was Grimson who's tried to drag them in there, but it's still taking a wee while.
So when you were at Chelsea, you had a music column in a newspaper. You were also subbed off to go to a gig before. How do you think you would fare now if you were doing that in the modern game? Would it be acceptable? Would there be a place for you, do you think?
You have to underline the people I asked to be subbed off so I can go to the gig.
You put it in your contract. Could you imagine going into Tuchel now this week and say, by the way, in my next contract, I'm going to a concert there at the end of July. How would that go down?
Maybe they kind of didn't get me. They thought I was weird. So you could, I wasn't getting away with it. Look, the reality is, I'd said to him, I'm not signing the contract unless I can go off at half-time in this end of season friendly, not a cup final, an end of season friendly against Brentford. And they just looked at me as if I was off my head. And so, but they understand, if it would have been a big game, I wouldn't have went off at half time. But I went off at half time. I went to see New Order down in central London. I had my Chelsea kit underneath my clothes. And I thought that was a perfectly normal way to behave. Because let's be honest, be fair with me, stick with me in this one. How many blokes are down the pub are going to work and they want to get to a gig or want to go to some, and they just throw their clothes on and go to the next thing? I'm just happy to be a footballer that does that. I don't think it's that weird. Okay, maybe from one angle it does look weird, but there's plenty of us that have done that, haven't we? You know, you're having a game of five and say you just put your clothes on and go to the pub or something. That's
fine. Good seat right beside you, wouldn't it? Imagine the smell. You'd have been a great draw, wouldn't you?
I was so fit, I never perspired. He lied.
But how do you find the media work? Because we have a few texts in here just saying that, how can Pat Nevin say that Kieran Tierney is the best left back in the planet? He isn't even in the top five. A few of them, you know, all right. Do you like that you might get criticised or challenged or people are disagreeing with you? Because it's a different world now with social media as well.
It's only an opinion. People do get very angry, and one of my best friends is Brian McClure, and I remember him and I having a conversation not long after Twitter started, and I said to him, when did you figure out the best thing about Twitter is winding people up? And he said, right away. And so did I. And if people don't get it, do you know somebody who says he's not even the top five? I respect your opinion. I do. You might not respect my opinion that I think he is, but I respect yours. And that's maybe the difference. People have got binary attitudes towards things in the modern world. I just happen not to have. And remember, I used to have 30,000 people shouting and screaming, bawling and howling at me. One wee guy behind a typewriter somewhere having a wee word, it's not really going to get to me. It's not going to really cut it, is it? So no, it doesn't affect me. But you don't really get involved in that stuff. Sometimes it can get a little bit ugly, but I worry more about other people, youngsters who have to live on social media. It's a big part of their personalities, all that sort of stuff. I mean, I have a son and a daughter, and it's harder for them. For me, I find myself ridiculous anyway most of the time, so I'm not going to take it serious. But I would argue that Kieran Tierney, I wouldn't have anyone in the world. I would actually strongly argue that. I've watched him at Celtic. I tried to get Chelsea to buy him. They didn't. They took Ben Chilwell instead. And as you said, he'll be the best. You believe me, in 10 years' time, he's the second player that I tried to get Chelsea to buy, and they refused to buy him. The other one I tried to get him by, they turned him down as well. And I said he would be the best in the world, and they refused to believe me then as well. But that guy, Van Dijk, done okay.
I love it.
You should get a job as a football agent, Pat. Definitely is a call of you.
The weird thing is, I used to work with BBC Radio 5 Live. And I would be doing Celtic games, and I would be saying, that guy's the best there is. He's the best in the business. And they were going, oh, don't talk rubbish. It's Celtic. It's a rubbish league. And I'm going, no, I'm watching the technical side here. The guy's unbelievable. He's absolutely brilliant. And you just get kind of laughed at. And then some guy would be on Twitter calling you an idiot, right? And then 5 years later, you're going, where is that guy who's called me an idiot 5 years ago?
hide behind his keyboard.
Or more likely forgotten than like I have.
Exactly. Pat, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks a million for taking our call. The Accidental Footballer is out on Thursday the 20th of May, and it's a fabulous read. We're going to join Darren Sturridge in Old Trafford, I think, Marie, are we?
We sure will.
Can you hear me?
We can, Darren. And we love the sound of the fans. We actually, you don't even have to talk. You can just let that play out.
That's it. I'll just turn my mic up. United have got a corner at the moment, so we might hear another roar. But we've got around about 2 minutes to go before the half-time whistle there. And it looks like a wonderful Edinson Cavani chip is going to be the difference at the break. Fernandez is flicked, set Cavani away. He raced forward before chipping Areola in the Fulham goal. Right in front of the Stretford end, and he raced to the corner there. Absolute joy from the Manchester United fans. 10,000 of them here to watch Cavani's first Old Trafford goal in front of fans. That's his 10th of the season, of course. It was nearly two. Bruno Fernandes with an effort on 25 minutes. Good 1-2 with Scott McTominay, but the goalkeeper was equal to it. And then Fulham on their first real attack. Cavalio was played through. He beat Victor Lindelof to the ball, but David De Gea was down to his left-hand side to save. So it does look like Edinson Cavani's goal after 15 minutes, and a wonderful goal it was too, could well be the difference here between the two sides in the first half. Couple of minutes to play, and it's Manchester United 1, Fulham 0.
Thank you, Darren Stanage. It is heading for half-time between Southampton and Leeds as well, and it is nil all there. We are going to take a very quick break, and then we're back with golf.
Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on. Go.
Welcome back to Game On. Of course, this weekend sees the second of golf majors being played at the Ocean Course in Kiwa Island. And Gary Murphy's going to join us on the line to discuss what even might or might not happen. Gary, back in 2012 when the USPGA was last played here, Rory McIlroy destroyed the field in 13 under par. Can we expect him or hope maybe that he can do the same this weekend?
I'm hoping, because I'd love to see an Irishman win another major. They don't come around very often, especially for Rory. You know, his regular golf over the last, since 2014 has been fantastic. He's won FedEx and loads of tournaments, and he's been there or thereabouts, but the majors have eluded him, so this is his main priority. He's kind of stuck on four majors, lucky him, but he'll be mad keen to try get another victory, and he's going back, as you said, to somewhere where he's won a major before. So coming off that win in Wells Fargo, you would guess that he's going to be banging form and ready to go come Thursday.
Gary, so he's won there before. Does that count for much when he's going out there again?
It does from the point of view. You know, he knows how to get it done around there. The hard part is you have to go out and execute it again. He's a totally different player, I think, in person to what he was in 2012. He was a fresh-faced young fella trying to win his second major. He's kind of married now, a kid with a little girl. He's a seasoned veteran as such. So, you know, his mindset will be very different. I think a lot of the Bob Rotella stuff is trying to get him back to where he was. You know, he's a little older and wiser. But certainly going back to, you know, he's won around there, so he must be very excited to get back to somewhere where he dominated as well. He didn't just win it, like, he destroyed the field.
Yeah, he won by 8 shots. And when you think about it, Gary, the Ocean Course, by name, you automatically think links. It's overlooking the Atlantic Ocean. Wind speeds will definitely have a bearing on what happens, but it doesn't play like a links course because, from memory, there's not much run on the ball here, is there?
No, there's not really. It's a different kind of grass than what we would associate with links golf in Ireland. I was playing a few holes in Baltrae last night, and you know the ground's like concrete and it's running forever. Whereas this Paspalum grass, which is much softer and spongier, so it'll be firm and relatively fast, but it wouldn't be like our traditional summer links here. But the sea breeze is the big thing, whether it blows or not. It is going to blow, but whether it blows properly, I don't think that's in the forecast. But as we know, with anything beside the ocean, things can change rapidly. But the big thing is they won't let the greens get super fast. And as we saw in 2012, the Europeans fared really well because they'd be used to putting on slower greens in Europe than they would in the States. So it's wide open. I mean, there's so many, when you go down through the list of, you know, who you'd have your tenor on, I mean, there's so many cases for so many players. And I think that's what makes it fascinating. plus the fact that the crowds are back. So it will really add. If you look at Morikawa when he won last year at Harding Park, you know, there was nobody there, so it didn't really have that huge major buzz which is going to have this weekend.
Gary, what makes it interesting this time round is that a lot of the big superstars, none of them are kind of showing outstanding form at the moment.
Yeah, I think that a bit of that is kind of more for scheduling, because a lot of guys prepare their schedules to get ready for the Masters. The Masters has gone kind of 6 weeks ago, so a lot of the top guys have kind of taken a little mini break since then. So it's that fine line between coming in, you know, too undercooked or coming in really fresh. So that's why it's a really interesting narrative, because you can get some guys that treat majors who are quality players as a bonus week, and there's a little less pressure on them. So it really is, it's a wonderful melting pot of who's actually going to, you know, get themselves to lift that trophy, that huge trophy.
Gary, it still will be a fair test of nerve. If you think back to 2012 and it was last played here, five of the toughest six holes were all on the back nine. I know there's two par fives in the back nine, but it is a fair test on the way home for whoever's going to be leading on Sunday afternoon.
It is. It's a really difficult golf course. I played it too many years ago. I think it was about 92 or 93. It was just open. And it's a really difficult golf course. But there's a great Irish history there. I mean, Paul and Padraig won the World Cup around here. Rory won a major around here. You know, so we're kind of praying for, you know, for a bit of local success from home. But as you say, whoever wins is going to earn it, because the last six holes are very difficult. And if the wind does get up a little bit on it Sunday afternoon, it'll dry out a bit. It's a major championship. I think it just augurs well, really, for a fantastic few days of golf.
And how important, Gary, is length going to be when it comes to teeing off?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about that in previews and stuff, and I think it's a little overrated, really, because there's very few top players out there that are exceptionally short. And there's very few top players that are playing this week that hit the ball really short. And the ones that might, which are very few, they're unbelievably, you know, accurate with their approach play, because that's why they've gotten to where they have in the game. So I think major championships, it's more about nerve. Guys, you know, you can only play your game when you're out there. So if you've got a shorter hitter playing with Rory or Bryson DeChambeau, you know, they're more than used to dealing with those kind of things. They're going to be 20, 30 yards behind. But sometimes the strength of those guys' games is their long iron play. And as I was saying with McIlroy over the years, he's not the best in the world with a short iron. So, you know, the guys have their own games to play. I don't think there's a massive thing to it. And especially if it does get windy for the really long hitters with ferocious, you know, club head speeds, they will add a lot of spin to the ball. So, and that's a disadvantage if it does get breezy and drafty. So I think the game is still the game. I don't think there's only one way to do it. And that's why, you know, you see so many different kinds of players doing well. I mean, in the last 21 majors, we've had 15 first-time winners. So, you know, there's no set way to do it. And I think that's what makes this tournament fascinating.
If you were looking for a first-time winner this weekend, then who would you be looking at? Victor Hovland or someone?
Yeah, I think Hovland, Rahm and Schauffele are the three picks for first-timers. I think Abraham Anser is a guy that kind of, for a bit of a price, kind of fits that bill too. He would be kind of one of the, as Marie was saying, kind of shorter hitters, but his tee to green stats are phenomenal. From, I think a number that's very important is one from kind of 175 to 200. And even though he's one of the shorter guys off the tee, he's exceptionally accurate from that distance. And that's an advantage around here, because he's going to have a lot of those shots. So I think they would be the picks of the first-timers. And then obviously Jordan Spieth's trying to win a Grand Slam, which only five other players have done. I'd just love to see him win, because he's my favourite player. But there's so many of them. And I think if you look back to the leaderboard in 2012, there was a lot of good scrappers in there, guys that know how to play the game and manoeuvre the ball around the course. So I think it'll be a mixed leaderboard. I don't think we're going to see, you know, a certain kind of just, you know, a really long hitter up there or an average hitter. I think there's going to be a good mix, and it's going to be a melting pot.
every time you say John Rahm and talk about first major, I find it really hard to believe that he still hasn't won one. Is this, could you say, the perfect opportunity for him, given the skills that he has and the course that it is and the form that he's showing?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think we can write off the Masters in a certain. I know he did okay, but you know, his wife had a baby the previous week, and he was quite emotional about that, and you know, not really ideal preparation coming into the Masters. Whereas different this time around, he missed the cut in Wells Fargo, first time to miss the cut in over a year, which is no bad thing either. So he'll be tuned in. He's won around Ballyliffin, he's won around Lahinch, he's won around Torrey Pines. You know, so he takes a lot of boxes in that regard, and I think if he's coming down the stretch, he'll have enough game and strong enough mind to be able to cope with it.
I suppose, Gary, if you root through enough of websites and look for enough of tips, you'll find one for everybody. But Shane Lowry's name did crop up in two places where I did look. He's a good price. Would you give him a squeak?
I'd give him a great chance because he's driving the ball really well. He seems to have found a little bit of form on the greens, and as we know with Shane, he'll drive you mad, you know, most weeks of the year because he can be quite inconsistent. But he does have that ability to pull off huge championships. When he won, you know, the WGC in Bridgestone, it was against the head, really, when he won in Portrush. So he does have that ability. And, you know, the second biggest tournament they've played this year with the players outside of the Masters, and he was kind of in the mix there. So I think the seaside thing might help him too, and I expect Shane to have a decent week.
He did a really good interview with Greg Allen there just a few weeks ago, and from listening to it, he seems like he's in a really good place as well, you know, just has that determination to push on now. Will this be the week?
I think he'll have a good week. Will he win it? I'm not sure, quite sure he'll win it, but like he's no reason, you know, as you say, he's in a wonderful place. I mean, he's living in Florida, he's playing on the PGA Tour. He's probably got more money than most governments, so why wouldn't he enjoy his golf, you know, and that's a big challenge for Shane going forward. I think he'll have a strong week. I really thought if Rory did anything at Wells Fargo, he was going to be a strong bet this week, and I had a couple of bob on him for this week before Wells Fargo because I thought he might do what he did. So Rory was my pick a couple of weeks ago, and I'm not going to go with him.
So if we were sticking you to the spot here now, Gary, to give us a couple that might get us entertainment for the weekend, at least make the cut now so we have a look on Saturday, where will we be going?
Well, I think there's one of the Irish bookmakers who I won't mention has a good Rory and Shane to be in the top 20 at about 20-1, which I think is a great price. But I think Victor Hovland as an each-way bet is great, and I think Anser as an each-way bet is great. And I'm hoping either Rory or Shane win, or Porrick, and if not, I think Jordan Spieth has to be there or thereabouts, so they'd be my selection.
Well, hopefully you've given us one there, Gary, and we'll be shouting for Rory and Shane, and sure, look here, if it's not happening, we'll shout for Jordan Spieth as well.
And John
Thanks
Ram.
A minute, and John Ram. Anyone else? Tonica, who are you going to shout for?
Any of the Irish. Let's keep it Irish.
Right, we'll all jump on the park and bandwagon. So.
There you go.
Gary Murphy, thanks a million.
Thanks, Ruby. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Game on. Go. Okay, guys, that is our lot for today. We will be back tomorrow. We will be doing our usual Women's GAA slot. We're going to have Alan Cawley live in studio to look at all the Premier League action, and we'll talk to Cavins, Aisling Sheridan. Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.